This is Brian Grasso with the International Youth Conditioning Association, www.iyca.org. Another installment for our free resource center, the place where you can come see as much as you want, because we're going to load that free center up with as much intellectual property and ideas and philosophies we possibly can to keep you well abreast of things regarding youth athletic training, youth fitness, developmental sciences, and everything in between, how to earn a living in this industry, how to change the world one step at a time. So I'm more than happy to have on with me today Dr. Kwame Brown, who's a founding member of the IYCA, a prominent member of our board of directors, the author of our, or co-author of our motor skill development chapter, and sole author of our bioenergetics chapter, two amazing resources in the IYCA textbook. So before I keep going, Kwame, let me just say thanks so much for coming on today and spending a little bit of time with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Brian.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, it's our opportunity. Thank you so much for being here. But, you know, and Kwame knows how I feel about him. He's just an amazing bundle of energy and resource for the IYCA, which extends to the world. And right now he's a director at a Fairfax County a program, which, you know, he can extrapolate on if we sort of touch on that throughout this conversation. But what initially brought Kwame and his ability to my eye when I first started the IYCA about 3-4 years ago now was first his passion. His passion is as developed as mine is regarding this topic, which is hard to match, to be brutally honest, and Kwame is right there with me. But second to that, but not less than that, was his amazing intelligence. I mean, the guy just understands stuff so well. And I thought I had a pretty good handle on motor skill development until I met him. I'll be honest, I know about an iota of what this man knows. So having said that, you know, Kwame, you and I have had a lot of discussions privately about motor skill development and as it relates to youth athletics, et cetera. And I want to start with this conversation with just a term, plasticity. It's something I banter around a lot, and I try to make people understand the relevance of it. But a pre-adolescent nervous system is plastic by nature. Could you sort of just walk us through what that means and what the repercussions of that are as we go later in life if we haven't explored a multidisciplinary action of sport development properly?
Well, that's correct, Brian. The pre-adolescent brain and spinal cord are more plastic than that of the adult. This is not to say that the adult system isn't plastic and doesn't have the ability to change, and that's really how we're defining plasticity here, is the ability of the system to change. Where that factors in is, and I have a unique opportunity to see this in action because I work at both ends of the spectrum. I work with children, and I also work with elderly people, and so I'm able to see and survey people that when they've had experience as a young child, they're a lot better able to assimilate movements, a lot better able to perform movements safely than if they had never had that experience. And we see that across the board in many different neural systems, not just the motor and sensory system, but also the visual system. The more practice and the more experience you have during the formative years, the better able you are and the more robust the system is at being able to assimilate and do things later on. And really what that means in a nutshell is that early practice begets later capability. So
that's perfect. That's what a great poignant way to end that. That's a perfect sort of encapsulation. And you also touched, Kwame, on the fact that it doesn't necessarily apply exclusively to the motor sensory issue, which whenever I'm talking about plasticity and the ramifications of it, which I want to get to in a second, I make it a more sort of, I suppose, comprehensible and understandable concept to people in that, you know, my dad is from Italy, my uncle is from Italy, my dad came to the North American part of the world when he was 19, my uncle when he was 3, and even though they both had very, very, very similar influx inroads into an English-speaking environment, to this day, my dad, you know, 50 years later, still speaks English with a very heavy accent, whereas my uncle, although Italian was his first language, and he had the same inroads as my dad to an English-speaking culture, he doesn't have even a trace of an accent. And to me, that's always just the plastic nature of the nervous system. My uncle, at a young age, was able to sort of assimilate to something so easily and so fully, so completely, because of the ability of his brain and spinal cord, in this case, you know, linguistic skills, to pick it up on a complete level.
Absolutely, and that's one of the points we want to drive home. I know as an organization is that move and move early, and that is a really eloquent analogy is the language thing, and how the language barrier is more stringent and harder to overcome as an adult than it is as a child. And if we look at what we're talking about in terms of kids moving as the language of movement, to be taught and to be taught early and to be taught well is more important than anything else I can think of.
Sure.
With children. It prevents back problems and problems with the joints later on in life. And what we're talking about here, and I know you share this sentiment with me, what we're talking about here is not children practicing throwing a football over and over again. What we're trying to promote is the fact that children need a variety of movement stimuli. They need a variety of experiences in order to really become a full-rounded person and athlete. Most of our great athletes, Brian, you and I always say this, most of our great athletes, if you look at them, they played multiple sports growing up. And you know what? They did it for fun, and they were taught properly.
Absolutely.
And that's really the most important thing is for kids to be taught to move properly.
Yeah, and what you guys don't know listening right now is that, you know, my week was just made for me because Dr. Kwame Brown called me eloquent, so that was just a highlight of my week right there. And I mean that sincerely, but, you know, Kwame, you made a great point. We're not talking about just throwing a football because mom, dad, coach, or even the child assumes they want to be a quarterback, you know, into the professional ranks one day. So let's pick up a football and throw it, you know, endlessly from the time we're 4 years old on. That's an interesting concept and one that's really hard to embrace for a lot of North Americans, certainly a lot of people around the world, to be honest. And one of the things I try to say is that, and I want you to comment on this, and as I've said before in interviews with other IYCA guests who I've had through the Free Resource Center, is that if you disagree with the statement I'm making, absolutely don't think twice about correcting me on it, because, you know, we can't be everything to everyone, and you know what, I could be wrong, and I'm happy to admit when I'm wrong, because that means I grow as a person. We should all have that attitude as far as I'm concerned, but I'll take like a baseball swing, you know, learning how to hit a baseball, and that the average parent, coach, might want to say, you know, I want my son to be a great baseball player one day, so I'm going to give him a bat when he's, you know, 6 years old, and we're going to learn to swing a bat, and we're going to swing it and swing it and swing it and swing it, and we're going to really build a skill in swinging a baseball bat, and by logical statement or common sense, that is going to mean he's going to be a great, you know, baseball player who can swing a bat great by the time he's 16. Now, my counter to that is that you have to consider a lot of things. First of all, you have to consider the injury considerations of, you know, rotating one direction, you know, dynamically, repetitively over and over again, first of all. Second of all, boredom. You know, kids don't have the passion and appreciation for it that you might as a parent or a coach trying to instill something in them. It has to be fun, vibrant, quick, and then move on. But the other thing is that we have to assess what a baseball swing is. What are the elements that comprise it? And to me, it's balance, it's peripheral dexterity, it's hand-eye coordination, it's hand speed. Those are all isolated features of coordination development and can be developed separately away from a baseball diamond, away from a bat in your hand, but still make it so that the youngster develops, certainly, all athletic ability, which will transpose to swing a baseball bat properly in time. So the reason I'm bringing that up is because, A, I want you to comment on that, but B, Kwame, I want you to sort of take us down. To the coach and the parent listening right now, the concept you just outlaid might make no sense. It's against common sense to them. So we have to sort of maybe identify why. Why is it wrong to sports specialize at an early age, aside from the argument that you need a multitude of athletic skills? Because that people might not embrace that very well. They might not understand it.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about, first I'd like to explore why we believe that the children have to focus on one sport in America and do that one sport well. It's because the American philosophy is to be first at everything, to be biggest at everything, and to get the most of everything. And so because of that philosophy, that pervades and influences every aspect of our lives. The reason we don't want to do that is because children will benefit from a variety of movements because of what you just mentioned just now. The fact that all these things like a baseball swing, we have to remember that these sports were built around what human capabilities are, not vice versa. Sometimes we try to build a human around the sport. Sports were built for people to do what people do. We naturally can hit things with an object. We naturally can throw something. Our bodies are built for doing things like that. What's most important is for the kid to learn how to move safely. What's also important in that respect is just general hand-eye coordination skills, and that's where that variety comes in. The more information that the brain and the spinal cord receive, the more they're able to gain and understand new information.
Sure.
And I know that is hard for a lot of parents and coaches to understand, but in that respect, I'll just say trust us.
Yeah, right. sure, it's an involved science, absolutely. Yep.
This is why people pay Brian and I to consult on things like that. It's because we know things like this. And that's not to sound egotistical. That's just because we spend a lot of time studying these things.
Sure.
That's just my message to the people out there. The fact is that the eye being able to see something is a result of several different processes going on in the brain. And a large part of those processes don't know whether you're looking at a baseball, a basketball, or a football. It's a really general skill to be able to pick up and track an object.
Right.
To be able to strike an object with another object is a very general skill. And it can be even further broken down into the ability to load the body in a certain direction and to release the body in a certain other direction. And that can be brought on, that skill can be brought on by a variety of things. Now, will the child be an expert batter? Not necessarily. But what they will have is the series of tools that they will use later on to become an expert batter.
Right.
And so the focus on dealing with young children, we're talking all the way up to, 13 or 14, is general skill.
Right.
Making sure that we have the proper balance in the musculature. For example, if someone only plays basketball from the time they're four and never plays any other sport, they'll usually end up with forward shoulders and head. Is that what we want to be as a human being? Absolutely not. You will not see that in kids that have played multiple sports. And also if they've done some very focused, very general strength training, focusing on what children need. They need to learn how to squat, lunge, bend, twist. They need to learn how to throw, to strike objects, multiple different kinds of objects. The more stimuli you give a kid to a certain extent, the better they'll get. Now, the trick here is to not overstimulate. The trick here is to worry about volume, and that's one of the things I wanted to speak out about. There's a graph, and you're looking at a bell-shaped curve. In other words, if I stimulate a child to a certain extent, I will maximize his potential. If I pass that extent, it will actually be to his detriment and actually retard his ability for growth, not necessarily physical stature, but I'm talking about growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to assimilate skills will be compromised by that increase in volume above that threshold.
Sure.
And that's something parents and coaches need to understand as well. It's not more practice makes perfect. It's perfect practice makes perfect, and rest.
Right.
These children need rest to grow, and they need rest in order for the body to make sense of what's just happened, and in order for the body and the brain and the spinal cord to make sense of what they're learning. If you inundate them with skill after skill after skill, practice after practice, you will break down the joints, and you will retard the ability of the central nervous system to assimilate information. The brain and spinal cord will fatigue just like the body does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's very important for people to understand.
Sure, critically. So. You know, and I want you to comment on this as well, Kwame, because it's there's several sports where volunteer coaches, administrators, and parents tend to give these concepts a rough ride because it's so foreign to them. And that's fine. That's part of the IYCA's objective, is to really bridge an understanding in people, non-confrontationally, but confrontationally if must be. I mean, we're advocating for children who are our most precious resource. And so we feel very strongly about, if confrontation happens, so be it. That's just the way it's going to be. We're right, and we're going to make sure people understand that. Having said that, the sport of soccer comes up a lot. I've worked historically a lot in soccer, and I've made a lot of presentations to coaches and parents. And when I build these concepts in their brains, there's an automatic denial. It happens almost routinely in every presentation I give to soccer authorities. And that's not an indictment on that sport. It's just a reality historically that I've seen. And what I try to get, the comeback I always get regarding what you just said, Kwame, is that, okay, but the Brazilians are the best teams in the world. That nationally speaking, they're historically the best, or one of the best in the world. And you're talking about kids growing up in Brazil who play soccer 17, 18 hours a day, literally in the summer. And here's where I quantify. I say, but you have to understand all of the variables that are attached to what you're saying. In Brazil, kids go out in the streets and they play soccer on their own. They create games. They create ideas. They don't just practice breakout drills specified to what the coach wants them to do. It's free play. That in
exactly.
and of itself is free movement and motor skill development in the absence of emotional strain, emotional
exactly.
stress.
Exactly, and I want to interject there. One of the most important things about sports has nothing to do with sports. It is the ability to pre-play, to be creative. And the reason that children should play sports is not so they can become professional athletes. It is the physical exploration of the environment and the extent to which that augments the overall capabilities of the child.
Right.
We see it throughout the animal kingdom. This is how children in every species learn about their environment. They explore it physically. They wrestle. They play. They create. They explore. If we relegate our children to mindless drills that are very focused and this is not to say that these drills shouldn't be done with high school athletes and things like that. We're really talking about younger kids here. Younger kids should be given an opportunity to free play. We use often what I call an enriched environment. So while we might have some structure to a session with a lot of young kids, we'll also ask them what they'd like to do.
Sure.
Also give them a choice of different toys and implements to play with, a choice of different balls to bounce and things like that. Sometimes they want to bounce a beach ball, not a basketball. That's fine. All these things will come into play later on and will influence their ability not only as athletes but as human beings.
Yeah, well
and,
said.
I like to say that we look at these children as young human beings first and athletes second.
Every time. I agree. And, you know, we're so in line with our thinking, which is why we've all gotten along so well, I think. But same concept with me, exactly what Kwame just said. I mean, I take a great deal of time of teaching certain movement parameters. They're in small bursts of isolation, though. It's not like I spend an hour teaching one thing. We teach it for a few minutes. We practice it. I have a principal system of how I develop it over time. But inevitably, I try and apply it to a practical situation. And I like to use obstacle courses because they're fun, they're engaging, they're multi-stimulating, they can change speeds, etc. But inevitably, once I've taught my skill and I try and apply it into an obstacle course, inevitably my next question is, all right, now you guys create the rest of the course for me. What should happen next? It's
exactly.
the most amazing thing to empower kids and say, what do you guys want to do next? And they'll create drills, Kwame, that I didn't even think of. I was like, wow, that makes
yep.
a lot of sense. That's fantastic.
And so games that you've never
so
heard of, too. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's one of the things you said I want to really sort of highlight is that, and I'm a broken record with these statistics, but they're so important. Athletics notwithstanding, in the United States of America, 30.3% of people aged 7 to 19 are clinically overweight, and 15.4% are clinically obese. It's not an American problem, though. The numbers in Australia have grown over 25% in the last 10 years in terms of youth obesity and youth overweight concerns. It's not about the young athlete. We have to build a culture, and we really have to start understanding that physical culture is very much part of a global intelligence each person has. And if we negate the physical culture by lifestyle choices, which is exactly what we're doing right now, we have two sects of kids in this country. We have highly competitive athletes, and we have overweight kids who don't want to do any activity. It's almost
yep.
like the middle ground is completely lost. And we have to take all those kids and loop them back into a middle ground where they're all developing the same way under the same parameters using the same developmental sciences, because whether it's elite athletics or just a healthy functional lifestyle, that is what we're trying to broach.
It's exactly what we're trying to broach, and we really want to achieve that middle ground. And those elite athletes, guess what? They're going to come out of that middle ground anyway, because what we're trying to build is a foundation of an ability to move,
exactly.
and that's going to serve both elite athletes and people that just want to grow up to lead healthy lives.
Yeah,
it's all the same.
Without question, that's another commonality I find that parents and coaches don't understand that. But that's okay, because that's part of our role and objective. But, you know, Kwame, I have one last question for you. You mentioned that you're talking general skill from a motor skill perspective up until around the age of 13, 14. And I know you're not quantifying that because
right.
a lot of factors go into that, so I'm not, you know, pushing you in that direction. Or certainly, I'm just trying to make sure people understand that 13, 14 is a general term. But what happens at 13, 14, or generally speaking that age, that we can start being a bit more specific now? Is there anything identifiable motor skill-wise that at this point?
Yeah, what we're talking about is the beginning of of the final stage of maturation of the nervous system. And that stage really goes all the way through, you know, age 20, 21. And we really don't, I'm glad you mentioned that, we really don't want to define this by chronological age. Sometimes we speak in those terms because that's what people understand. But what we're really talking about is developmental age. And sometimes that's impossible to measure. So we use chronological age as sort of a general indicator. But you always want to watch a child and make sure you actually evaluate what they're ready for. Because I've had 14, 15-year-old kids that come to me and they can't even squat with the back straight.
Sure.
And I'm certainly not going to take them and do power drills.
Yeah, right.
So what I want to drive the point home that what we're talking about, you know, I've seen people doing, you know, heavy deadlifts with kids that are 11, 12 years old. And we have an indicator, a ready-made indicator, as to when a child is ready to accept large weights. It's when they're through with puberty. Mm. There are things that happen to the bone structure and to the connective tissue during puberty. It's not just about the sexual hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that people understand that as well. And coinciding with that, because look at puberty. What's puberty preparing a human being for? To be an adult, to be out there in the world, to fend for oneself, to reproduce, okay? All those things coincide together with the child becoming an adult in terms of the central nervous system as well. So we want to make sure that we know that that's the age at which cognitively, physically, emotionally, and with respect to motor skills, the kids start to become ready to do more adult things,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I emphasize the term start to become ready,
sure.
okay? And this is an ongoing process, and I don't want people to look at it as a clear mark and say this is the point at which this child is an adult. They are not; they're a child until probably about the age of 21.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. No. And you know, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, and we have actually in the past. Let me just make one more statement, and you know, comment on this if you need to or you want to. Certainly, I'd love you to comment on it. I've always tried to make coaches and trainers, even other personal trainers, understand that the universe is smarter than we are by nature. I mean, nature is smarter than we. And if you just assess what happens emotionally, cognitively, and physically through a developmental period in various stages of life, in the early pre-adolescence, you have, you know, a heightened sense of inquisitive nature. You know, what's this?
Exactly.
What's that? Always touching. You have a heightened sense of movement. If you know neurology like Kwame Brown does, you have a heightened sense of a plastic nature to the brain and spinal cord. As we age, you said it so well, what does puberty do? It prepares us for adulthood. It's not about what we think is best. All youth development is, it's understanding and honoring natural law.
Yes, sir, and I will comment on that, and that's really what we want to do. All we want to do is augment what's supposed to already be happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem, you mentioned the kids that don't move at all, the problem is that they completely miss the critical period for physical development.
Mm.
And that creates all sorts of problems later on. And then the problem with your so-called elite athletes, I laugh at the term elite athlete for a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
They're a child.
Right.
The problem when people consider them as elite athletes is that you're inundating them so much with stimuli, stimuli, stimuli during that period that it'll be to their detriment in terms of the critical period because they're getting too much stimulus. They're not getting that chance to rest like I mentioned earlier.
Sure.
So we do. We definitely want to honor nature's plan, and we want to just augment it as much as possible and respect the fact that this is a 9-10-year-old child that you're dealing with. So.
Yeah. And, you know, Kwame, I do have one more comment. I apologize for taking up more of your time. But one thing you said about 5 minutes ago, it just resonated, and it just came back into my head right now, something I want to comment on or talk to you on. But, you know, Dr. Kwame Brown is a PhD. He is a researcher, incredibly intelligent man. But to me, to Brian Grasso, more than anything else, he's a very passionate and astute coach. That's how I see him. Beyond the research, beyond the credentials, I see him as a very passionate an astute coach. And when you were talking, Kwame, about, you know, the ages of 13, 14 being relatively general ideas of chronological age in terms of when we're going to start changing or shifting gears to a bit more of a specific protocol, you mentioned, you know, it doesn't apply to a global population all the time, and the coach has to watch, be watchful. And that, I think, is just something that is so has to be picked up by trainers and coaches, that there are no guarantees or absolutes. And, you know, the topic of assessment is a hot-button issue right now in our industry. How do you assess? When do you assess? And I always say, you know, assessment is what it is, and that's fine. I'm not prepared to quantify exactly how I feel about it at this point in time for a lot of reasons. But if you're looking to do a structural assessment of an 8-year-old before you start a training program because you want to ascertain certain things, you better be prepared to reassess them 5 days later because they're
exactly.
8 and they're
the
growing.
The variability of a child to go through an assessment is in question at that age.
Right,
so
exactly.
What you want to do is assess them during free play and watch what they happen, watch the choices they make, watch the movements that they perform, because they won't always stand up to a rigid test. So,
and I
will have to bid you adieu, because we are actually about to take some pictures for one of the summer programs we're doing here in Fairfax County, and I do have to get to one of my other fitness directors that works with me. But I will wish you farewell and good luck on your trip that's coming up, Brian, and I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and talk to these coaches and parents.
Kwame, thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. All the best to you, my friend.
Okay, you too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.